thank you so much for tuning in once again to my podcast. And today, I've got Jonathan Maddock of Red Tail Technology, you may have heard of, a California-based provider of software for financial advisors. Jonathan, welcome.
Thanks for having me there, Sarah.
You betcha. So Jonathan, tell us, what are you working on lately?
So right now, so over here at Red Tail, I'm a subject matter expert. So really what I'm mainly doing is I travel around for our Red Tail University, and I work with financial advisors, and we give kind of an 8-hour workshop throughout the day. And we just really are talking about CRM and how it kind of works best for, financial advisors' offices. So that's what I've been really doing lately. More recently, we've been talking about text messaging, and that's been the real hot topic lately, because here at Red Tail, we've come out with first of its kind, a text solution that is built into your CRM that allows you to compliantly reach out and text your clients, which is huge for the industry. That's really what I've been doing mostly.
Yeah, I love that, because I always have to laugh whenever I leave a voicemail, because I always think no one's even going to listen to this.
That's so true. Just not jumping too far into it, but the big stat that I took away from an article I recently wrote was 80% of Americans are texting regularly, yet only about 10% of financial firms are actually texting as well. So there's a huge discrepancy in what people are actually doing, our clients are actually, are their behavior versus what advisor firms are doing. So hopefully we can go ahead and kind of close that gap a bit.
Yeah. Well, see, the way I see text messaging evolving is, I remember 10 years ago, maybe it started, and it was just a thing that maybe the younger generations were doing. And it seems like now everybody's texting. Even my retirement age parents are doing it.
Yeah, it really is true. And I think that you made a good point, is the younger generations were more of it was quick access. And even, I think some of the older generations were still doing it, definitely not as much, but it was more of an update, right? It didn't replace the whole conversational piece of it. And now you're seeing that people are really texting, long messages back and forth. And I think that's the big transition that's what we're seeing.
Okay. So let's actually talk about that part before we move forward. So when should advisors text instead of using email or calling?
So I think it really comes down to, how fast do I need to get that information to somebody? The example that I will show you is recently, where we saw a lot of people who are currently users of Speak, our product, is when that volatility in the market came about here, what was it, a couple weeks back or a couple months back, a lot of people were kind of stressing, right? They were like, oh no, what's going on? Because the market kind of dropped pretty abruptly. Well, what they were able to do is the people who are using Speak, they were able to text their clients very quickly and get a direct response from them, or just a direct message to them and say, hey, listen, you're fine. You're in good hands. And they could go on. Whereas if you were to use something like an email or even a phone call, you're going to be maybe disrupt them with a phone call, and an email may not get to them in time. So it's one of those things that you kind of find that happy medium of, I can reach out via text message and I can quickly get, information to them, but also not necessarily disrupt them and make sure that I'm getting to them in a timely manner.
So let's back it up a little bit and look at what other industries outside of financial advising are doing, because you're saying that adoption is 10% of advisory firms are using this. Is it more popular with other industries?
I don't
know. I know healthcare. I know I get text messages about my kids' doctor's appointments from my
doctor. And I think it really is going to come down to compliance, right? Because with financial advising, everything has to be documented. That is a communication, correct? So what you're going to have is, how do I go ahead and document that? Whereas outside of something like financial advising, if I'm in maybe healthcare, I don't think there's as much compliance surrounding that communication. So, you know, and if there is, I think the big healthcare providers have already gone around that with systems like we are using or that we are providing.
Well, yeah, they don't really say anything. They just do it to confirm appointments.
Sure.
Or they're not going to text you and be like, we found this in your blood.
Oh, absolutely not.
You know, they'll just tell you, you have your test results are available online. That's all they say. But I'm pretty sure they are compliant.
Sure.
Yeah. That's healthcare, so, I think, is one. But what I'm saying is, like, I don't get text messages from, well, actually, no, I do. I get text messages from my kids' school. See, I'm trying to think of everything that I buy, every place I buy things from. And, you know, I have like 3 young children, so all my money is consumed by these services for them.
Absolutely. This is
like 100% of my money goes. So I eat things once in a while. But I have a business suit. I own a business suit, but that's it. But other than my Time Warner bill. Time Warner, tweet me out here if you're hearing that. If you're following my podcast, make sure you tweet this. I'm a customer.
Yeah.
So, okay.
Well, I mean, I think you just hit a great point right there, was with, you know, telecommunications, right? They have no regulation as to whether or not they can text you or not, because you can opt out at any given time, right? So there's no hindering, you know, hindrance by them to just reach out to you via text message. Whereas with something that is, you know, regulated and there's a lot of compliance behind it, you have to open up that dialogue, right? You have to accept that, hey, do you want to receive text messages from your advisor? And they say yes, and then they move on that way. So I think that's the big difference, is going to be compliance.
Well, I almost feel though, like if we look at I almost am a little worried about this here, because we're in, I would say, the early to mid stages of adoption of this for business. I don't know that.
Sure.
I don't think the average business has adopted this. Maybe they have.
No.
I don't know. But anyways, it just would be, see, the way I see things, we used to send brochures in the mail.
Yeah.
Now any brochure that I get, I just directly deposit it into my recycle bin. It's like I don't even look at what it is. There's no way. I look for bills, checks, and then everything else goes in the pail. So, but then also, if you think about email, the filters are so strong with email newsletters now that you can't even, Constant Contact, I think, doesn't work for a lot of people. People give, there are entire companies that have given up on email newsletters across the board because of all the spam filtering now. So my question is to you is, how could this, I mean, could we, is there some kind of unsubscribe movement that is probably going to rise up in response to the world adopting text messaging? Probably. Do you see this coming?
I absolutely do. I think that just like anything else, I mean, if we were to really compare it to email and text messaging, I absolutely think that that's going to have to play a part. And I think that the telecommunication companies, people like AT&T, Verizon, I think that they're going to have to be involved as well, because if I can't necessarily block a phone number from text messaging me, you know, who's going to prevent that, right? And it's really my provider. So I think that you're nailed it right on the head there with, is there is going to be some sort of bigger regulation or some sort of way for us to opt out of that type of method of communication as we get further along and you know, the different changes that are going to happen.
So I'm probably a little bit biased about this because sales and marketing for advisors is what I coach people on for a living.
Okay.
So I'm completely biased here saying this, but I personally believe that advisors should shoot the ball more. I think like for me, every day I take some kind of a jump shot. I try to get one new prospect in the pipeline.
Sure.
Right. I just do whatever it takes to do that, because I just think if you're going to have a business, you always want to have the business. You have to just have a pipeline and that's it. Not the pipeline expecting it to be there when you need it, because it's never there when you need it if you're not prospecting constantly. So I am. So I love the idea of prospecting. And if you could do it via text messaging, that would be great. But here's my question. Do you know of how the laws work? Is it possible for advisors to cold text message somebody?
So based off of the regulation that I am aware of, no. So I can't just out of the blue shoot a text message to somebody and say, hey, you know, these are the services, you know, whatever that your intro
like, message. Like, hey, Mr. Shop owner that is, you know, 5 doors down from me, I don't even know you, you don't know who I am. So But they can cold call.
And you're absolutely right. No, I guess I would ask maybe.
I think it varies by firm. I think that's the answer, is it varies by firm, because I remembered being there. You always have to have a do not call list. But mm-hmm. I think hedge funds can't cold call people. But I don't know that there's some universal DOL or Federal Communications Committee guideline that states that financial firms cannot cold call or cold text message. Because I wouldn't imagine if people can cold call that they can't text on a cold basis as well.
You bring up a great point, because you're right. What classifies somebody, if it's a prospect, do I need to be tracking all the communication that I make with them? Right. So then if that's the point, maybe I divert that, you know, that regulation, right? Because if they're just a person at this point in time and they're not a client, I don't know what the regulation is, but I think you're on to something, is that if they're not a client yet, they don't have anything signed with you, do I need to be documenting anything? But right. I'm not a compliance person, but I'm
interested. How would a system like yours work in terms of documenting these things? How would Redtail work? If one of my clients were on Redtail and I said, okay, Mary, I want you to cold text message. Let's say she could, right? You're going to send cold text messages to these 20 attorneys that you met at this, that are on this list. Okay. And she did that. She texted them. How is that tracked automatically?
So here's the thing with Speak, is you have to open up the dialogue. So you have a customizable message that is going to be sent from the phone number that is given to you, and it's going to be sent to, you know, that person's cell phone. And it's going to say, hi, you know, client, I would like to open up text messaging dialogue with you. So they have to actually respond, and they have to, you know, accept opening up that dialogue first. So, I mean, really, and that's just the way that our system works. That's why I was mentioning earlier, is that if there's a compliance portion of it that I can go ahead and sidestep because they're not necessarily a client yet, I don't know really what that looks like. But I'm saying from our perspective with Speak, is you do have to open up that dialogue. They do have to accept it before you can start sending text messages. So if they decline that, then I wouldn't continue to send text messages.
Oh yeah. I mean, every prospect would probably decline that.
Exactly. Right.
So, okay. Yeah. So probably not at the point, it's not maybe the best prospecting tool at this point. So I was interested in your article because you were saying this really stuck out to me. Millennial attrition risk is 4 times higher than for other generations. Is that specific to financial services?
That is specific to financial services. So the I was actually kind of referencing another article that was written by, I think it was in Investment News, and they were discussing that. So if you kind of take that and couple it with just the fact that you're going to be getting better service, or they found that the services that were providing text messaging had higher satisfaction levels. That's what we were kind of talking about there. But yeah, it is specific.
Holy guacamole. I mean, but you have to keep in mind too that many of the millennials conceivably, from what I would imagine, would be working with a robo-advisor. So perhaps that is why the turnover would be higher. Would that make sense?
I think that would make sense.
Right. I mean, the idea of when I think of a millennial being served by the financial advisor industry, I don't know that too many of them are necessarily on the full scale, paying 1%, have $1 million or more.
A lot of them have debt.
A lot of them are with these millennial advisors that make money off a subscription where they're paying them $100 a month or something, and the advisor is making more money off of webinars and the subscription service, and they have podcasts that they get sponsored and they do speaking engagements. So they're much more like media personalities in some ways than they are actual money managers.
So I would also be taking a look at, you know, So with the wealth transfer is really the big thing that's going on right now. And you have to kind of think if I'm a, because there's a lot of stats backing this up. And one I know is, you know, 66% of people who inherit money generally will fire their financial advisor within the first year. So what you're taking a look at is you're saying, okay, if that's sad and all these millennials are going to be gaining all this money over the next 30 years, right? I'm going to watch all of that wealth walk out the door. So if you're a financial advisor, what I would recommend that them doing is working with those kids or those millennials as well, while I'm managing their parents' or grandparents' money as well, because that money, it's just going to another person, but I can still end up managing it, right? So really for financial advisors, they should be taking a look at taking on these clients at a lower rate or kind of helping them out so that later on when that wealth begins to leave and goes ahead and transfers through inheritance, it's staying with me and it's not going over to maybe somebody they went to college with or somebody like a robo advisor.
Yeah, well, the millennials are, I think a question I think the advisor community hasn't yet entirely figured out. And here's the reason. If I'm an advisor and I have an affluent client and they have children that are maybe Henry's high earner, not rich yet, or maybe low income earner, they're going to inherit the wealth anyways. Depends on how much wealth there is. They may or may not be qualified at that point, right? Depending on their income. But if I have to include the child's portfolio of debt and $10,000 and go through all the iterations of uploading, acquiring the account, all of the operational aspects of that, that's going to really kill my margins.
It's true.
But at the same time, there is the sentiment in the advisor community, the robo-advisors are your enemy and are competing with them. So many of them have failed to adopt, for example, Betterment for advisors or even Schwab's intelligent institutional portfolios platform, where you can actually manage this millennial wealth under your branding. Yep. So it won't, in the case of Betterment, it won't even come across as this is your Betterment account. It will come across as this is your blah, blah financial account. But many advisors are very kind of stubborn about the robo-advisors being their competition and reducing their fees. In reality, there are so many ways you can work with the millennials if you want to do that.
Absolutely. I 100% agree. I think that is, I mean, I think you can kind of do a little bit of both, right? I mean, just like the way you described it, that if you embrace the technology, which it is out there, you know, us coming from a technology company, I think that you have a lot of, you know, a lot to gain there. So I agree with you.
I totally agree with that. For example, if you were to use a robo-advisor platform for your children of your affluent clients, let's say you were to gain 20 new clients a month. Now they aren't paying you $20,000 a month. You might not even be making any money off of that.
Sure.
But for the future, when these people come into either receiving the inheritance or they actually do start to accumulate and become high net worth investors, do you realize what a massive, massive advantage that would be? Like what
it's huge.
Donkey Kong.
Yeah, I agree.
Going on, right?
You would have everything. I mean, literally, it's like prospecting for like the 10 years down the line, right? I mean, that's what you're doing. You're literally working. You're doing the super slow game. You're just slowly, you know, nurturing it. And I mean, there's a lot of companies out there that are doing or that have technology just like you described, right? That are there for that specific reason, and you know, not everybody wants to hop on board.
But if you wanted to adopt a red tail and a robo, it's possible that not just your millennial clients would be into it, because I mean, I'm not a millennial, but I kind of like it when my school text messages me instead of calling me about a snow day. And I kind of like it when because for example, I recently had to go do an account transfer. That's because I'm rich. Everybody on the podcast, I'm extremely rich. LOL. Anyways, no, I'm a successful person. But anyways, no, I had to transfer an account from one custodian to the other.
Okay.
And they're like, yeah, you know, send us the statement in the mail. And I'm like, you've got to be kidding me, right? I have 3 children, ages 4 and under. Everything in my house is plastic or like chained to the wall, okay? There is no breakable printer on my premise in this house. You're going to make me go to like Staples and stand in line with my 3 screaming kids that just want to go home and watch Peppa Pig? I couldn't believe it. I would have loved it. I was like, you know what? Maybe I should be looking at them robos.
Yeah.
You may have just lost my business there, custodian.
Well, and that's the big thing is, you know, the experience, right? I mean, that's a huge thing that I think that is being overlooked in this industry as a whole is that experience.
I'm going to call this podcast episode, Jonathan, the texting experience.
That's a good one.
The experience of being texted to is not just for millennials.
It's for everybody. I mean, right. It really is at this point in time. And I think you alluded to it at the very beginning, right? Everybody is texting nowadays, right? I mean, we already have a stat, 80% of Americans are already texting regularly, right? Not all 80% are millennials. You know, there's a huge portion of Americans who are texting now. So everybody should be, you know, use that texting method.
Right.
Yeah, exactly.
So, okay. I want to just to end the podcast here. I always end my podcast with actionable items.
Okay.
I haven't thought of a good phrase for that yet. I'm kind of a boring person and very blasé, wouldn't you say, Jonathan?
No, you're lively. I'm listening to your podcast. They're good.
I know it is. Thank you. But it's just that, you know, at the end, I haven't thought of a – it'll probably be like Sarah's zinger or like Ziggy throwing me out of the door or something like that. Anyways, so I always like to end this with things that people can actually take action on. So I want to end this podcast with some rules of texting. So some texting no-nos, okay? So the number one thing that I don't like about text messaging, and I just said I'm team text message, but I don't like it when somebody texts something dramatic that you really should talk about. Like I think we've all gotten that text message from someone who has something contentious to say to us.
Mm-hmm.
So how do advisors handle it when, I mean, I just think advisors should not text, for example, something about, I mean, yes, you should text these clients, but I just don't think it should be something like, I mean, be emotionally intelligent about it. Like, don't
exactly.
Be like, who's handling the wire transfers for your mother who just passed away and we're transit, you know what I'm saying? Like, don't pick up the phone in that case.
Exactly. I think there's a time and a place for text messaging, right? And I think that it goes back to, you know, what should be a conversation over the phone and where can I be empathetic and where can I, you know, hear that tone and all those you know, voice tones and things like that versus when do I need to quickly send a text message to update somebody so that they don't, you know, fly off and, you know, think
right,
that.
Yeah, we're meeting at Starbucks instead of, you know, McDonald's today, whatever, right? Yeah.
You know, and you know, hey, you know, you know, can you go ahead, you know, what is this looking like? Or, you know, whatever little pieces of information that I can quickly update, I think is great. And also I think that it's all based off of the client, right? Some clients are probably going to be really, really text heavy and that's all they want to do is text message. Sure. You have to be ready for that. Right. And then there's going to be maybe.
Hold on. Ding, ding, yep. Ding. That's another rule is don't assume that everybody is going to want to be texted to a lot.
That's exactly right.
I like that. Yeah. That's where you're going with that. Okay. And then you also mentioned be aware, and I had this on my list too, that written words don't necessarily carry tone like spoken ones do.
Totally. You can lose a lot in a text message. Like I cannot even tell you how many times, you know, I'm getting married here in September and you know, send a text message to the fiance, you know, and you lose complete tone in it. And
like, for example, are you ready yet
to get married?
No. Oh. Wait, hold on. That's an example of that. Just can show you how hard it is to communicate. I was just saying as an example of a text message, if I sent you, if I asked you something, if I said, if we were going to meet and I said to you, are you ready yet? If I sent that over email or over text, that can sound like, are you ready yet?
Yeah, I'm waiting on you.
Yet?
Yep.
You don't know. Or is if I say it to you over in like with my voice, it's are you ready yet?
Yeah, exactly.
You know?
you lose, there's so much loss in translation there. And, you know, the big one, and I'm just going to joke about this, is the hard period, where somebody will write out a message. And then if they throw a period at the end of it, a lot of times for me, that seems very direct and maybe aggressive, right? Now, I'm not saying every time, but depending on the message, some people may throw a smiley face at the end of it, right? So it's upbeat. Versus if you say something, are you ready, period, you know, obviously it's a question mark, but it's something like that can really adjust how you read it. And I think that can show a lot.
So I see what you're saying, that sometimes we do need to make these little adjustments by actually including these emojis or emoticons, sure, or whatever. But then also I would just say that, and also with any acronyms you use, like if, for example, somebody sent me an email with, I didn't like your article, IMO, it was very cheesy, which, by the way, I get that all the time. And if any of you are interested in trashing me on social media, please just go ahead and tweet at me. I could really use the attention. It's at Grillo Invest. I mean, you're going to do it anyways, whether or not I tell you, but I actually wholeheartedly support this and would love it at Grillo Invest. But anyways, so she was like, IMO, the article was bad. And I'm like, what does that even mean? I had to go to Google over it. So it can be a little irritating if that were my service provider. Like, I had nothing to do with that person in general, but if that were my service provider, I'd be like, it's a little annoying.
Well, and I think that's it right there. I think one of the other things, maybe another rule that you can create, is avoid that in professional conversation, right? Depending on what your relationship is, in general, avoid acronyms. Yeah. You know, get rid of them. Just don't do them.
But people over texting, I think they kind of get a little, they feel like it's a little freer, a little more conversational sometimes.
And that's totally fine. I would, if it was communication with my service provider, I would try to be as professional as I possibly could.
Yeah. So here's the other thing I have on my list here. Mm-hmm. Make sure the person knows you are the sender. So I get so many text messages like, hey, I moved to Detroit, and I have no idea if this person is a client, in which case I should definitely be excited, because I've also gotten those text messages like, hey, Sarah, this is your ex-boyfriend from like 15 years ago. It's like, I don't want to respond to you. I'm not going to respond to that. You know, like, all I need is for my man to see my cell phone.
Exactly.
Who is this? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I would just say, I always say, like, when I text my clients or prospects, I always say, this is Sarah Grillo. Let's talk tomorrow.
Right? Exactly. Yeah. And the good thing is, like I was mentioning earlier with Speak, the product that Redtail has out, is that you open up that dialogue. So once you have that, you know, and it's already kind of set there, then you can either, they can save the number or whatever, and then they know who's going to be reaching out to you. So yeah, there is always that intro. So for the first time that message is being sent, it will really help with what you're describing there, is make sure you know who you're texting, or they know who they're receiving a text message from. I think that's a good one.
Right. Okay. All right, Jonathan, I'm going to wrap here. Well, thanks so much for being my guest.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having me. You know, if anybody has any questions about Speak, you know, feel free to reach out to us at redtailtechnology.com, and we can go ahead and help out anybody. But again, I appreciate you having me on.
You betcha. All right, everybody. All right. Thanks for listening. And please remember to subscribe, rate, and review this podcast. Bye now.